Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Christine Cole with the Department of Justice on behalf of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. In this eminent domain action, the City of Joliet seeks to tear down 356 units of low-income housing. That's housing in which HUD has a strong interest and an obligation to preserve under congressionally created housing programs. The city's condemnation of Evergreen Terrace without HUD approval would frustrate Congress's purposes and objectives in several of those federal programs. Therefore, the city's action is preempted under federal law.
What particular statute are you relying on?
The principal statute.
The reason we took this is because we thought HUD was arguing on particular statutory language as opposed to just the general purpose that more housing is better than less. That's an issue we dealt with in our first appeal. So we thought HUD was making arguments that differed from those already considered and rejected. That's why I'm interested in what particular language of the enacted statutes you're relying on.
Your Honor, the particular statutes that we're relying on are two statutes that did not figure in this Court's prior decision in the New West case. The principal one is the Multifamily Assisted Housing Affordability and Reform Act that was enacted in 1997. Under that statute, the precise and explicit purpose of that statute is to preserve federally assisted low-income housing. And it does that through a key provision, and that's in 514E6. Under that provision, any of these low-income housing facilities that go through the MARA refinancing process must agree to a 30-year use restriction. And under that restriction,
Counsel, that's what led to the Court's question, how an agreement between the developer and HUD can restrict the city's powers. And your brief then said it can't. There's nothing about the contract between these people and HUD that restricts the city's powers. So the fact that somebody has agreed to a 30-year rule, I thought you have already said in your brief, doesn't matter.
It's not the contract per se, Your Honor. It's the fact that that contract is mandated by federal law. Again, it's MARA provision 514E6, which not only says that under a MARA refinancing for one of these housing facilities must agree to the 30-year restriction. That restriction must be reflected in a recorded, legally enforceable document. I don't know how you could find a clearer expression of congressional intent.
I can easily imagine. I can imagine a statute that says
short of an explicit
state and local
presumption.
Authority is preempted, for example. I can imagine a conflict. I mean, but suppose, suppose federal law says that if you get an insured loan, a federally insured loan, a housing loan, which a veteran might get, you have to agree to keep the house in good repair for 30 years. Does that mean that the house can't be condemned under local law or state law?
That's an entirely different type of statutory scheme than you have here. The provisions of MARA, not just simply the 30-year use restriction, but it establishes a...
Counsel, I asked you a particular question. I would appreciate an answer.
And my answer is, as in all preemption cases, both those involving explicit preemption and implied preemption, such as at issue here, what is the touchstone is congressional intent. Case after case, both of this circuit and the Supreme Court established that you look at the entire statutory scheme.
Counsel, you won't be able to hear my questions if you try to talk over
me. I apologize, Your Honor.
I don't know what intent means apart from the language of a statute. That's why I asked a hypothetical question about an essentially identical statute, but it deals with single houses rather than apartment blocks. And I'm trying to figure out whether that law, which as far as I know is not actually hypothetical, there are requirements from federally insured loans that the property be kept in good repair, not converted into stores and so on. They actually exist. Whether they preempt local condemnation. Is there some principal distinction between single-family and multifamily dwellings? What, Or do you think that the statute I gave you does preempt?
If the statute in your hypothetical were to contain the same type of language reflecting the same type of congressional policy to preserve low-income housing that is a part of a joint private sector federal partnership to meet the nation's critical housing needs, then yes, my answer would be the same. I don't know if such statute exists, but I do know that the particular statute that's critical here, the multifamily assisted housing reform and affordability act, does contain numerous indications of clear congressional intent that any property that undergoes a refinancing under MARA and the rigorous analysis of both the need for the housing and the cost effectiveness of rehabilitating and maintaining that housing, any such property that undergoes that and gets HUD approval, that's another key ingredient here, is HUD has to approve that refinancing. At that point, then, the statutory requirement for the 30-year use restriction kicks in. We are not arguing, as our brief makes clear, that there can never be an eminent domain action against any type of multifamily, federally subsidized housing property across the board. It depends on the circumstances, and it depends on whether or not HUD consents to that.
Well, then you are arguing for a complete displacement of eminent domain because eminent domain is coercive by its nature. I mean, if you're arguing that it can only happen with HUD consent, then that's a complete displacement of eminent domain.
But not, Your Honor, as to every property across the nation. Again,
as to every property across the nation, that's the import of a holding, or at least within this circuit, if we rule in your favor.
I disagree, Your Honor, because, again, we've made clear that this is a matter of how the statutory scheme is implemented. Congress gave HUD considerable discretion in how these programs are to be implemented, whether it's the MARA refinancing program or the Section 221 mortgage insurance program. Those statutes are both replete with references and directions, in fact, to HUD to establish the terms and conditions. And so what all of that means is that it requires necessarily a look at the individual housing project on its terms as to whether that particular project can be rehabilitated, whether it serves the needs. In this case, there were two independent analyses done as part of the MARA refinancing and restructuring, and both of those independent surveys of the Evergreen Terrace facilities came to the conclusion that the property could be rehabilitated with the funds that came about as a consequence of the refinancing. And second, and perhaps even more critical here for purposes of Congress's objectives, is the fact that there was no alternative housing that could take care of the 600 people that currently reside in these facilities. There is a critical need in the Joliet area. So necessarily these kinds of judgments and decisions that HUD makes in these housing programs is limited.
I could understand an argument that it might make sense to pass a statute that if a federal agency certifies that there is a critical need for housing in a particular geographic location, then the housing can't be condemned. But that's not at all what the statute says and not what your argument says. As Judge Sykes said, what you've argued is that any time a property has received a federal grant under this program, it can never be condemned anywhere in the nation, no matter how much local housing there is, ever. And it's a completely different line of argument from, I mean, it's a completely different legal conclusion from the kind of argument you're now making.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the way the statutory scheme is set up, the way Congress created it, it's not a situation where HUD makes the kind of certification that you articulated at the outset of your question.
Look, counsel, that's the problem. The actual statutory scheme is not one in which HUD says there's a shortage of housing in X, we need to preserve these units. It's one in which, on your argument, if the unit has received a subsidy, it can never be condemned, even if there's a surplus of that kind of housing.
That's not true, Your Honor, because in order to get the refinancing and the restructuring under MARA, there has to be one of these analyses, and a key part of that kind of analysis undertaken by one of these independent participating administrators.
For 30 years, even if there's lots of other local housing built after that. Right? Suppose in 1980, an analysis is made, financing is extended, and then there's a huge building boom. If I understand your argument correctly, the first unit to be built in 1980 can't be condemned, even if there's now a surplus, because of a judgment made in 1980 that it was good to subsidize this. Is that right or a correct or incorrect understanding of your argument?
It's true that under the statute, under MARA, there's no provision made to go back and revisit, say, 5, 10, 15 years into the 30-year agreement. But again, Congress has made a judgment, and that judgment must be respected. Congress spoke very clearly when it said that 30-year use restriction has to be included in a legally enforceable and recorded document. Again, short of stating in explicit terms that such a property can't be condemned, I think there is an extremely strong evidence here of implied preemption based on that kind of congressional intent that's reflected in the statute.
Well, there are many other federal-private partnerships in the federal code, it seems to me, and so your ruling has extremely broad, or the ruling that you're asking for has extremely broad implications.
Again, Your Honor, I don't think so because of the limitation that we recognize that if HUD does not decide to, HUD could decide to agree to a condemnation
that's
or eminent domain.
That's not a limitation at all.
Well, as far as other similar programs, I think very strong case law supports us under the Rural Electrification Act. The case is cited in our brief, City of Morgan City out of the Fifth Circuit, the Panderay case out of the Ninth Circuit. In those cases, under the Rural Electrification Act, we've got an analog, basically. There's no mandate that any rural electrical cooperative come under the REA umbrella and be a participant. These are incentive-based federal programs. But once a cooperative does say they want to be part of that program, then they are subject to federal regulation. And in those two cases that I cited, the Fifth and Ninth Circuits decided that any local eminent domain action against a portion of those cooperatives was, in fact, preempted under federal law based on the
I'm sorry, but I want to get to those cases. But didn't the court justify in both of those instances the holding on the grounds that the proceedings threatened the entire system or program of providing electricity to rural areas, as opposed to our situation where we're really talking about one complex? I mean, I think that's a big distinction.
Well, I think it's a distinction that makes more sense when you're talking about the electrical grid, which does have a nationwide element. I think one area in which this case departs from the REA cases is the very fact that housing is local. There's really no other way to make a judgment. We're not saying that because housing, low-income housing may be scarce in Joliet, that necessarily dictates what's true across the country for purposes of whether there's preemption of an eminent domain action. In that respect, our argument is, again, it must be made on a very specific basis, on the basis of what these participating administrative entity reports are. That's why Congress created the statutory scheme that it did, that requires this lengthy process of analyzing whether there truly is a need for the housing and whether or not the rehabilitation of the housing can be undertaken in a cost-effective manner. So while the REA cases in general demonstrate that a federal program that is incentive-based rather than mandatory can certainly be subject to preemption of an eminent domain action. In that sense, they are a very strong support for HUD's arguments here. But again, factually, there is quite a difference between the nationwide electrical grid and housing. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Cole. Ms. Miller.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Claudette Miller, if it please the Court. I represent New West and New Bluff, which are the Illinois limited partnerships that own Evergreen Terrace and have since the 1980s. We represent the private half of the public-private partnership for preserving and creating multifamily housing that Congress created in the NHA and MARA that you've heard referenced a bit here by HUD. Basically, Your Honor, my clients accepted Congress's invitation to make a long-term investment in and a commitment to partner with it in providing affordable housing. There was two transactions, one in the 80s when HUD sold us the property and regulatory agreements, mortgages, and other documents were entered into, and then a subsequent transaction when MARA was now in effect, when in addition to regulatory agreements, a use agreement was enacted. All of these agreements mandated that the property remain affordable housing. HUD, in both instances, acted pursuant to delegated powers and undertook evaluations, considered public and local government opinions, and Joliet participated in that. Joliet wants to reverse and override a decision that HUD made, and it believes that it's allowed to do so by cloaking itself in the eminent domain power. And we believe that the Constitution does not support that contention. As demonstrated in our briefs and also the other appellants' briefs, Joliet's efforts are preempted and prohibited because they interfere and conflict with affordable housing programs and HUD's actions pursuant to those programs. We've set forth some cases in addition to the REAC cases, housing cases where other local police powers similar to eminent domain were preempted, and those were instances where the local authority's effort was much less substantive than an eminent domain action. We also believe that under the property clause, Joliet cannot do this because there are property interests here. The regulatory agreements, which are recorded, the mortgage insurance itself gives some congressional control or plenary congressional control over federal interests. Joliet has come close to asserting that the federal government has to have a fee simple ownership interest in order to have any property clause protection, but stop short of that goal, which it has to. We've cited a number of cases that state that a federal interest less than fee simple has to be respected and is accorded property clause protection. Assignment of a mortgage, some leasehold interests that were held by private parties. All of those are cited in our brief as well, and that, again, was a congressional delegation and an action pursuant thereto. We've also set forth arguments indicating that under the Contracts Clause, the contracts in question here, which were part and parcel of a congressional program and not incidental to the transactions or to the issues that are at stake here.
Getting back to your property clause argument, even if we assume that HUD has some property interest in Evergreen Terrace, does that mean that the building is immune from state regulation?
No, Your Honor. We believe that to the extent that the local regulations conflict with federal laws and programs, there is not a preemption issue. For instance, the California coastal case they cited, the property owners to try to take this per se preemption approach, though this is federal land, you can't do anything, and the court said that's not true. There's no instance here or evidence to suggest here that this getting a permit affects that program. If what Joliet wanted to do did not impact these programs, we wouldn't be asserting that the property clause prohibited it. We have, in fact, applied for permits in the past, and that's in the stipulated record. Your Honor, my light is on, and unless there are further questions from the court, I thank you very much for your time.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Bowles.
May it please the Court, my name is Catherine Walls. I'm an attorney for the Evergreen Terrace Tenants. The Evergreen Terrace Tenants support and concur with the arguments presented on behalf of the United States Department of Housing and Urban Development and New West and New Bluff. We have only a few additional points to add. If the District Court's analysis of preemption is allowed to stand, this decision could put at risk one of the second largest federally subsidized housing programs in this country and disrupt the national housing policy created by the National Housing Act and MARA. Evergreen Terrace is one of 24,000 federally subsidized developments in this country, providing housing to low-income to 1.4 million low-income families, seniors, and persons with disability. The condemnation cannot proceed here due to a clear showing of conflict preemption. Simply put, Joliet requires the elimination of Evergreen Terrace while the federal laws require its preservation for the next 30 years. If this condemnation is upheld, it could serve as a green light to other municipalities to eliminate their low-income federal housing programs one development at a time. And these actions will ultimately and essentially frustrate the goals and objectives of the National Housing Act and of MARA. The promise of financial compensation by Joliet cannot repair the damage done to these two federal statutes aimed at creating and preserving affordable housing. And for my clients and all of the Evergreen Terrace families, all 356, the majority of whom are low-income minorities, disabled, and seniors, the likely result will be their permanent displacement from the city of Joliet. As HUD reported in its argument, two independent market studies were conducted during the MARA restructuring, and from those studies it was found that if the housing at Evergreen Terrace was not preserved, displaced Evergreen Terrace tenants would likely have to leave the city of Joliet because there wasn't a supply of decent, safe, and affordable housing in the city. Courts determining potential violations of the Supremacy Clause have recognized that local condemnations can be stopped if there is a finding of implied conflict preemption. And the REA cases cited by HUD support this. Pandoriel and City of Morgan City, also railway cases, City of Lincoln versus Surface Transportation, and also City of Madison versus Bear Creek Water Association, dealing with a federally subsidized rural water utility. It does not matter that the program is voluntary into entry for New West, New Bluff. Forest Park v. Hadley, the Eighth Circuit opinion, recognizes the voluntary nature of these programs, that it's an incentive-based program to encourage owners to enter into the program. And in that case, they preempted a state law requiring additional notice before exit of the program because they said Congress intended the owners had the incentive both to voluntarily enter and to exit the program. It also doesn't matter if there are common goals between the two parties. Joliet argues that they're also trying to create affordable housing. The courts look, however, to if there are, even if there are common goals, are there conflicting means? And in this case, there clearly are. Again, Joliet seeks to eliminate what HUD seeks to preserve under MARA and the National Housing Act. Unless the court has any questions, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Walls. Mr. Gigante.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Carl Gigante. I'm here on behalf of the City of Joliet. I guess I should start with the jurisdiction, but before I do, I just want to follow up on a comment by Ms. Walls just now, Forest Park v. Hanley case, talking about the owners in these privately owned Section 8 housing projects having the right to remove themselves from the program, to voluntarily enter it and to voluntarily exit it. And if the owners, and they certainly do, have the right to prepay their mortgages and exit this program, there is no 30-year guarantee for these tenants of any kind. And if that's the case, and if the owners have the right to prepay, and they do, then how could that possibly override the state's power to acquire this property? Let me step back just a moment, Your Honors, and just cover the jurisdictional issue briefly. It's our position that removal here was improper. proper because the naming of the only federal party, Jenny May, was a mistake, was an error. Undisputed that Jenny May had no interest in this case whatsoever. That was based on a title report that indicated that Jenny May held a mortgage. The title report was wrong. We found that out. We brought that to the attention of Jenny May's lawyers. We moved to dismiss. There was no opposition. The court granted Jenny May's motion to dismiss. The error comes when the court refused to remand this case. Refused to remand on the basis that Joliet may someday in the future decide to name HUD. District court jurisdiction shouldn't be based on prognosticating the entry into a state case of a federal party. At the time the court decided that or suggested that that future event would occur, HUD was not a party to the case, had never appeared in this case, and didn't even move to intervene in this case. After the court denied remand on the speculation that HUD may someday be brought in, New West made a motion under Rule 19 to add HUD as a party. And in the motion, it clearly states that HUD was invited to join, and it declined to join on that Rule 19 motion. Went ahead and granted it, compounding its error. There was no jurisdiction for the court to entertain a Rule 19 motion at that point.
I'm puzzled by all this. HUD doesn't seem to want to be out of this case. And as long as it's in this case, it's entitled to be in federal court.
Your Honor, that's true, except at the outset, when we were discussing removal, HUD's interest in getting into this case, which was critical, seemed to be reticent at best. But I
don't understand the point. Let's suppose the district court was mistaken, that it should have remanded. HUD would be entitled to remove the instant it becomes a party. It is now a party. It wants to be in federal court. So what's the point? This case will be resolved in federal court. It can be resolved in federal court now, or we can remand it to the district court with instructions to remand. Within 30 minutes after it gets to the state court, HUD will file a notice of removal. It will be back in federal court, and you will just have wasted 6 months.
Your Honor, when it would get remanded, it would be my understanding that we would take the case as it was filed at the time of remand. At the time of remand, HUD was not named as a party. So HUD would have to intervene in the state court proceedings.
HUD is a party now. Mm-hmm. If it were remanded, HUD would remain a party.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's
move on to the heart of the case.
Very, very well.
Nobody's buying what you're trying
to
do.
All right, Judge. Thank you.
So on this whole condemnation issue, if we adopt your position, won't cities have unlimited discretion to condemn HUD-insured properties other than the public use requirement? Are there any checks that would be on the city's power to condemn HUD-insured low-income housing developments?
If, other than the public use and the declaration of a finding of necessity, I can't think of any offhand, Judge, that there would be any. The state law would govern in that instance, and no, I cannot think of any as I sit here. There'd be any checks on that.
The city would essentially have unlimited discretion except in those two instances.
When it's privately owned property, that's right, subject to the state's power of eminent domain, subject to challenges, of course, by the owners as well as the tenants. That is correct.
How is that not a direct conflict with this housing program?
Because, Your Honor, first of all, we have to look at the objective of this housing program, and they keep mentioning the fact that it is to provide incentives to the private sector to own and operate these projects. The taking here has already admitted that there's no fiscal impact to the parties here. HUD has admitted that, I believe, on page 23 of its reply brief, that its financial interest would be repaid. So there is no impact to that objective of providing incentives to the private sector because they will be recouped. And moreover, Judge, the goals that they state of providing affordable housing, they've already, under the National Housing Act, for instance, and other statutes, these housing projects are subject to local municipal zoning ordinances and other and municipal codes of regarding building codes and stuff. So if there was an obstacle concern on the part of Congress, they would have insulated these properties from complying with zoning, for instance. With a zoning code, could certainly limit the number of residents in a particular housing project. And the statutory framework gives local authorities discretion to impose zoning codes, building codes, and whatever they need to impose on these particular projects. In fact, under the National Housing Act, the only statute, by the way, that has been introduced now to this court for the first time that it wasn't last time, because MARA was discussed before this court last time. I mean, it was brought up in the supplemental briefs that this court asked the parties to submit. But under the National Housing Act, insurance for mortgage properties can only be given to properties that are in compliance with local zoning codes.
Well, so, could the city of Joliet rezone Evergreen Terrace out of existence without coming into conflict with this housing program, federal housing program?
It may be able to under the zoning code if it gave the adequate notice, and of course it'd have to go through its own processes of doing that.
And that wouldn't raise a problem of conflict preemption?
Not directly under the National Housing Act. I mean, if that section there means what it says, that the properties are to be in compliance with local zoning codes, no, Congress apparently didn't. Congress allowed for the fact that these privately owned subsidized Section 8 housing projects are going to be subject to local controls. There's no indication at all, Your Honors. We're dealing with national...
So let me just ask you, sure. So any time there are local controls that conflict, the local controls would prevail?
The local controls over prevail. Privately owned... And now, yeah, right. If it was privately owned...
Even if it was insured by HUD?
That's right, because the National Housing Insurance... I mean, the policy under the NHA with regard to insurance for mortgages does contemplate that the properties will be subject to local zoning codes and whatnot. Yes.
Well, why doesn't that jeopardize Congress's attempt to maintain the stock of affordable housing?
Because it was a balance between encouraging the private sector to invest in these properties and give them the right to get out, too. And it was it had to recognize that these are individually privately owned properties. If Congress wanted to control this site, for instance, it would own it, or it would pass now, some legislation.
Counsel, that just goes to the means that Congress chose to meet its objective of providing a stock of safe, affordable housing for low-income people.
Correct.
So that's not the appropriate argument to make here. If we accept the stated goals of this program as articulated in the statutes, your argument is too narrow.
Well, I don't see if the stated goal is that they say is to provide affordable housing, then we would have a whole host of state laws that would come into conflict with that, including zoning. I mean, that's my point. Is there can't be an obstacle there because Congress didn't.
Apparently, there's an express reference to not displacing zoning requirements, but there isn't an express reference to displacement of eminent domain. This is not an express preemption case.
That's right. But it's an intent, and we're looking for intent, as Judge Easterbrook said. So I'm looking for the statute somewhere to indicate that Congress intended to preempt a state sovereign power of eminent domain. And if they allowed for zoning to control, I don't see why they wouldn't allow for the power of eminent domain.
Actually, what I said is that intent is not useful. No one cares about the contents of the heads of members of Congress. We care about what they actually enacted. Now, what they actually enacted may have consequences, and sometimes it's useful to use the word intent to sum up the consequences. But the idea that it's the contents of their head rather than the text of what they enacted that matters is not sound.
Very well, Judge. In any event, the 75 years since the National Housing Act was passed, we can't find any language that would suggest an intent to preempt. In any event, I will move on briefly to just to mention that if we're going to preempt, they're not asking us, by the way, to preempt just a state law or a state regulation. It's a state power here that's at stake, and it's an inherent attribute of sovereignty. And if we're going to preempt that, the law seems to be very clear that there must be a clear express intent on the part of Congress to do something like that. And there just isn't that here. The mortgage documents themselves contemplate that this property will be condemned. They were prepared on HUD forms. Paragraph 8 of the mortgage says all proceeds from condemnation shall go to the mortgagee. We have cited to the court regulations under the CFRs that contemplate condemnation or eminent domain.
All of that was in our first opinion.
That's right. And they have only – that's exactly right, Your Honor. The fact is that there is no the mortgage also, by the way, contains another provision about compliance with local codes as well. But if the federal interest is so pervasive here, I'll get back to my first point. How could it be defeated by ownership's decision to prepay this mortgage? And the decision to preserve Evergreen Terrace, Your Honors, also the decision under MARA, it postdated the filing of this case. It came in September 2006. They also make reference to various reports. They're not in the record, by the way. There's some references to them. And also the Morgan City case, Your Honor, and those rural electrification cases. Might add that in Morgan City, another item there was that the court found that the taking could jeopardize the repayment of federal loans, which would jeopardize the entire network, as Your Honor pointed out. That's not the case here. And also, the 30-year term of the use agreements, that also expires once the mortgage is paid off. In fact, the regulatory agreement exists only as long as the mortgage exists. It's tied directly to the mortgage. It's all contingent. The property clause, Your Honors, I'll be brief. The property clause is based on an enormously expansive interpretation of the term property. And there is no precedent to support an interpretation as broad as advanced by New West and my opponents. And it's interesting that it is not being advanced here by HUD. They say that the mortgage is a property interest, but the mortgage, again, came after the filing of this case. They also say that HUD has a reversionary interest in this property, and it doesn't. It doesn't have the right to take ownership of this property, at least at the time of the filing. It was merely the mortgage insurer. With regard to the contract clause, there is no case that has ever held a contract clause to be a bar to eminent domain. We cited the Hawaii Housing Authority versus Midkiff case, the Supreme Court decision that said the contract clause has never been thought to protect against the exercise of the power of eminent domain. They don't explain why that should not apply here. And intergovernmental immunity, I don't believe the parties have addressed that in oral argument, but I'll just say that has only been used and only been applied to the government properties themselves or to entities that have been incorporated into the government structure. In conclusion, Your Honors, I just want to say that it's been, like I said, 75 years since the National Housing Act has been passed, and all the legislation that's been passed since that time, there's been no indication that Congress intended to insulate privately owned Section 8 housing projects from local condemnation or state condemnation in all that time. It's been 20 months since we've been before this court, and this court invited the parties to explain the basis or the statutory framework that would entitle the preemption argument to prevail here, and they have not done that. We'd ask that the case be remanded or the lower court's decision be affirmed and that we move this eminent domain case onward. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Ms. Cole?
Yes, Your Honor. Judge Easterbrook, you asked earlier about specific sections of the statute that are pertinent here. One that I failed to mention that is quite relevant is in MARA. It's 514F. What that provision provides is that there will be participation by tenants, the city, government, and others that are affected by the MARA restructuring process. This is important here because it clearly reflects Congress's creation of a role for the local government in this process. That role, though, is limited to one of cooperation, working to resolve whatever whatever problems may exist with the particular housing, and so forth. But at bottom, this is a reflection, again, it's a further indication of Congress's intent, in addition to the use restrictions for 30 years, as to what Congress intended under this MARA restructuring program. With respect to the provisions in various HUD regulations and in the documents that refer to eminent domain or condemnation proceeds and so forth, the regulations that have been cited by the city and that were cited in the New West opinion are under different programs. But even if they were pertinent to these two particular statutes that we're talking about here, MARA and NHA 221, all those provisions reflect is that there may well be situations when an eminent domain proceeding could go forward, but they would go forward with HUD's approval. And so, therefore, there's nothing remarkable about the fact that a mortgage agreement might contain a boilerplate clause that says here's what happens to the compensation should there be a condemnation. But again, in this case, it's HUD's position, based on the MARA restructuring and refinancing, is that this property is both necessary and can be rehabilitated. And for that reason, HUD has put more money into it. HUD now holds the mortgages. HUD doesn't merely insure the mortgages any longer. This also is not merely about compensation. As our briefs tried to make clear, what's at stake here is the congressional policy that's reflected in both the NHA Section 221 program and MARA. And again, Congress couldn't be more explicit about its purposes. In Section 511B of MARA, Congress specifically states that its intent through that legislation is to preserve the housing, the nation's low-cost housing stock. And this is especially important at a time of growing need for low-income housing. The city has basically admitted in response to Judge Williams' question that there would be no limit under its view of this litigation as to when any city could exercise eminent domain or condemnation over properties in which the federal government has a strong and longstanding interest. That just comes squarely up against the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution. In this case, the city's action would completely derail the MARA restructuring process that Congress has so carefully crafted in that 1997 legislation. It's really difficult to see how you could have a clearer case under the frustration of purpose doctrine. And one further point, we are not arguing that Illinois state preemption law is, or Illinois state eminent domain law is preempted here. We're talking about a local ordinance and the action taken pursuant to that ordinance. That's what is preempted here in the specifics of this given situation involving Evergreen Terrace. The action by the federal government or the federal government's argument is no broader than that, but it is an important argument. Unless Your Honors have any further questions, we thank you and ask that the district court's judgment be reversed.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.